Ghost Stories Online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see, I did it written in paint, where you just painted.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And indeed it is, and on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, someone so troubled in life now finds ways to create trouble in death. An extra player appears on the green during a round of golf. A girlfriend witnesses her boyfriend being haunted via Skype, although she cannot see the ghost. And a rejected family member decides after her death and her home is sold to keep the house for herself. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hi.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm trying really hard to not cough. So
it's going to be detected as an EVP.
Yeah, I think we had one of those a couple days ago.
I had one and I went back and listened to it. It was on the grandfather clock episode. Mm-hmm. I had a couple people say the same time marker and everything. It was like 3010 or something of that nature. And I listened to it and it was just me.
Oh.
It was me after I made a pause and I said, okay. And then I said something.
Mm-hmm.
Hear that little, that's me.
Okay.
That's part of how I speak all the time is when I'm thinking of something, sometimes I'll make that little croaking sound.
Sure.
And it's multiple times that people think it was an EVP. It does sound kind of creepy if you don't know what it is.
Well, I think we have an episode that's yet to be released where I had a coughing fit and you shut my mic off.
Uh-huh.
But you can still kind of vaguely hear it on yours and it sounds like a ghost talking in the background.
There's something in the background.
It's not. It's just me.
Some ghost just coughing up a hairball.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Not really. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Well, hey, kind of weird because you got cough season in summer. I usually hit cough season around December, January.
I'm just adjusting to the new allergies and mm-hmm. discovering I need to be on allergy meds like all the time now.
Sure,
and
sure.
That's what started this.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll get better soon.
Yeah.
Is the allergy medicine working?
It is. It is. It turned into like a respiratory infection.
Sure.
So antibiotics are taking care of that.
And then you'll be all better. And no more EVJs.
Okay.
All right, electronic voice phenomenon. Jenny voice phenomenon. JVP is what it would be.
Okay.
Jenny voice phenomena.
Sounds good.
That's what that would be. So there you go. Mm-hmm. New initials here today.
Okay.
So, all right, on to our first story. It comes into us from Zainab. Writes in, hello, found your podcast on Google Play. Listen to it every day at work. I'll be an EPP member soon so I can listen to more stories while I work. I'm from Ottawa, Ontario, and I live with my boyfriend in a one-bedroom. While he initially went to rent this unit, he found out that a woman had committed suicide in the unit. Nobody wanted it. He'd be the first tenant since the suicide. There's usually some odd things that go on that you sort of have gotten used to. Before I moved in, he'd occasionally find an antidepressant lying around, and we think her suicide was because of depression. Every so often, we'll find them pop up in odd places, but she's not malicious. There's another presence, though, that scares the bejesus out of my cat and gives me an uneasy feeling. Here's my story. My boyfriend and I are getting ready for bed, so we turn off all the lights in the apartment and I crawl into bed. He's still doing something at the other end of the apartment. I pull the covers up and I read some articles on my phone. The cat curls up by my feet like she always does and everything is normal. Suddenly I get this intense feeling like somebody's in the room. My chest is suddenly tight and I'm uneasy. My cat is staring intently upward and she's not relaxed anymore. I look up and there's a very tall, completely black man-shaped shadow figure facing me, about 2 feet away from the side of the bed I'm on. It was as tall as my boyfriend, and if he were to stand on his toes and sway ever so slightly from side to side. I assumed it was because he doesn't stand like that normally and he's just trying to scare me. I was so uncomfortable, I got angry at him. I'm yelling at the tall shadow like, seriously, Adam, you're not funny, just go to bed. I'm really upset, you're freaking me and the cat out. Hope your legs hurt from standing up like that for so long, among other things. While in the middle of my yelling at the shadow, I can see the bathroom door open and the light pouring out from it. When I hear my boyfriend's voice saying, what are you yelling about? I can't hear you in here. My heart sank. I look up and the shadow figure was gone. My cat just stared at me. Apparently, he was in the bathroom the whole time. When I told him there was something in the bedroom, he attributed it to me acting crazy. I was always a stern skeptic until I moved into this apartment. More to come from the creepy suicide unit, as my neighbors call it.
That's not nice. They shouldn't pick on him.
No, that's, yeah.
So it's kind of a shadow person showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really match. I mean, unless it was a really large, tall woman, it doesn't really match the description of what you would imagine would be haunting that apartment.
Sure, and it makes you wonder if it really actually is anything to do with the suicide victim there.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's something that's just maybe was attracted to all the, you know, the energy. The someone who was in distress, someone who was depressed, someone who was going through bad things, and it still kind of lingers.
Or it's chicken or the egg. I mean, it could be that thing was there and was just enough to push her over the edge.
Yep, that too. Yeah, it's hard to really know, but not exactly an apartment I think anyone would really want.
No.
I wonder if others, you know, because it sat vacant for so long, and obviously there's the stigma there, if you just know the story of what happened there, of people not wanting to rent it, but I wonder if other folks just had a vibe just going through it, not knowing the story, because I don't believe you have to disclose that when you're renting out a place, so I'm guessing whoever was renting it out was not exactly advertising the history of the property. If others just like, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Thanks for the story. We appreciate that. Stacy writes in, about 4 to 5 years ago, my husband and I were golfing at a small walking course in Northern California. As we were finishing up our second hole and walking to the tee box of the third hole, I noticed a young woman and an older gentleman in front of us. My husband and I tee off on 3, which is a par 3, and this particular hole kind of double backs on itself to the next hole. So essentially, you can leave your golf bag at a bench on tee and tee off on number 4, you have to haul your bag all the way to the green and then back to tee off on 4. So as we did, we start heading to the bench to drop off our bags. At this point, I noticed that the young woman and older gentleman that were ahead of us were sitting on the bench waiting their turn to tee off on number 4. Also at this point, I noticed a young man, guessing late teens, maybe early 20s, sitting with them. I remarked, thinking, where did he come from and how did he get past us without me seeing him? As we made eye contact, I kind of cracked a smile at him and nodded my head. We'd eye contact for a good 20 to 30 seconds. I glance at the other two and make a mental note that they were not talking to each other. At this point, my husband and I both drop our bags and continue to the green to finish our hole. As we both punted in, I bent over, picked up my ball, and start walking towards the bench where all 3 of them were sitting. But now all I see is the young lady and older gentleman. I turn to my husband and say, what happened to the young guy that was with them? My husband says, what guy? I say, the guy that was sitting with them on the bench. He was there when we were walking by to drop our bags off. He tells me he never saw anyone else but the original 2 that had been in front of us the whole time. First, I think he's joking because he's a big-time jokester. He then tells me he's not kidding and is telling the truth. I start looking everywhere for this young man, thinking he was there and my husband just didn't see him. He just came to talk with a couple, and front of us because he knew them. And they had to continue golfing, so he got up and left, which is kind of strange because you don't see people on the course just coming for a visit. At this point, golf was the last thing on my mind. I could not concentrate at all, looking everywhere for the young man. I then decided to catch up with the couple in front of us and ask where the young man went. When I finally was able to catch up, I asked the older gentleman, "What happened to the young man sitting with them on the bench?" He looked at me as if I had three heads. He told me there wasn't anyone else with him at all that day. I played it off as I must have been mistaken, but my mind and soul knew that I could no longer be a fence sitter about a ghost. That, in that moment, my life had changed to a true believer. I walked over to my husband and fell apart, crying, melting to the ground at what I had just seen. This perfect young man, baseball cap, jean shorts, tennis shoes with white socks, had just shown himself to me, plain as day. I could not see any difference in him, the two people sitting right next to him. Now let's fast forward the story to about a year ago. I joined a women's golf league, and we were on our way to a tourney out of town, and on the car ride, as a way to get to know me out of the blue, someone asked me if I had any ghost stories. I said, yes, I do. And I start to tell them one of the many other strange happenings in my life. Then I remember the golf course story, and I stop to say, I'm not going to tell that story since we all golf. I'll tell you my golfing ghost story. So I tell them about the young man on hole number 4 sitting on the bench, and one of the ladies says, you know that the owners of that golf course lost their son when he was a teenager? I did not know this. They said they would bring me their yearbook the following week to show me his picture. And you guessed it, they brought me the yearbook, and there he was, my ghost at the golf course. At some point, I want to go back to that golf course and talk to the owners to see if they're receptive to my story. As of yet, I have not. Since a very young age, something has drawn me in and piqued my interest about ghosts, but I always have had a very healthy, skeptical mind about it. But to say this event made a concrete impression on my soul, thought I'd share. Just find you guys online. Love to listen on road trips. Makes the time fly by.
I don't know that I would go back and talk to the owners about it.
Might be a difficult conversation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know how that would benefit them if their son didn't go into the light and, you know, he's still around.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might be more upsetting to know that, you know, he is still around haunting the golf course. I don't know.
Or it could end up with the conversation of, hey, here's what I had. And like, oh, he was on 4? Okay, well, we had the story of him on 8. And, you know, there could be multiple stories.
Mm-hmm.
She may not be the only one who's had this experience on that course. And I'm guessing she's probably not. And I'm guessing she may be one of the few who've realized it was a ghost, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could see that very easily being, oh, it's a groundskeeper, or it's this, or it's her that. I mean, I've been in golf courses before where you see somebody out there and you think you're going to run into them on the next hole, and they're like, where did they go?
Sure.
You know, so.
I don't know. I just don't see what good that would do to tell them that their son's still around.
Yeah, I agree. Good story, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first, is that the first golf story that we've had? Golf ghost story? It's a rare breed of ghost story.
Yeah, that might be.
Probably because there's not a whole lot that happens on a golf course that is all that. Although there is a lot of energy, I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that get rather angry at their golf balls and say extreme things. So I could see that being attractive for ghosts, but after that, it's done.
Sure.
There's nobody like, not many golf course massacres.
Yeah.
At least that I'm aware of.
Right.
You know, so. Anyway, Jennifer writes in, I'll start off by saying I don't have to be believed, but I share for the simple fact that there's always comfort in others knowing that I am not alone. I'm sensitive. I've known for a long time this fact and use it in ways to help others if I could. My family all have one sensitivity or another, which can lead to many events in my life. I have many ghost stories of things happening to my brother and myself. I'll share this one. My father had remarried, and I gained several sisters in this arrangement. I also had to deal with every other weekend going out to the country and spending time with them, as per the divorce decree my parents had. My brother and I were given the largest room of their house, which was set by itself off to the kitchen side. This room was exceptionally cold and dark. My senses often going off in the room, and the desire of not wanting to be alone in there pricked the back of my neck. One of the first times showering at the house, I was pinched and my hair pulled made me get out quickly, screaming at my newly acquired siblings. They all laughed and explained that the spirit just liked me. Things like this continued in the house, and the girls were never allowed to be alone in the house because of one of the things there. I say things because one is never sure of what is out there in the world. After dealing with a lot of this behavior, and in my frustration, I demanded to learn what was going on. My stepmother had informed my brother and I that we lived in the old room of her grandfather's friend, and he passed on in his sleep there. He was a bit of a trickster, but never mean. He'd just turn lights on and off, TVs would come on, rooms would be cold, fans would be turned on, and, you know, the normal ghostly stuff. When my distress of the other events happened, she said they didn't talk about that stuff. The other thing there didn't like it. The thing was a shadow of sorts and often terrified the girls when my brother and I weren't around. It was at this time I was becoming exhausted and didn't like going over to their house. In a reaction of fearing that my father would be displeased with her if I wouldn't come back, she requested a local practicing witch to come and talk with my brother and me. Dismissing my brother as just a protective person, she focused on me, explaining with my sensitivities and a practice of protecting myself, the shadow creature wouldn't bother the others because it had to focus on me to get any reaction. This would result in bruising, exhaustion, and accidents. The worst of it for me was when we would scratch on the windows trying to get me to go outside and check for the noise. Events like this continued often and never stopped. There was no resolution, no clean end, and I became of age and was not required to go back anymore, and believe me, I was happy to be rid of the house. I have other stories from these times, including a haunted restaurant my father's wife's family owned, cemetery visits, and another haunted house I was unfortunately living in during college.
There's a lot there that it could be any one of the kids. It could be the house itself. It could be the situation. I mean, it's hard to know why, but that's pretty extreme that it's going on to the point where the girls can't be alone.
It sounds rather vicious. I mean, and again, it's one of those two where it's difficult to say, is it something evil? Is it something demonic? Or is it just something that's really just, you know, a bad ghost?
Yeah.
Was a bad person and is doing the same thing in death. Hard to know without more evidence there, but I think the right choice was made, not going back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to, let's go see what happens again. It'll probably happen again.
Right.
So, yeah. Thanks for sharing. We would love to hear your other stories that you had mentioned. Mike writes in, this story spans 15 to 20 years. My parents are married in 1972. My mother had two kids from a previous marriage already. My older sister was 5 at the time, and my older brother was 4. In 1974, they had my older brother, and I would come along later, but we will get to that. We were not well off at first, but my father had been promoted at the insurance company he worked for in Hartford, Connecticut, and he had gotten a 401k in benefits, so they decided to move out of the cramped apartment they had been living in. My father found a colonial-style home in New Britain, Connecticut. It was built in 1925 in a kid-friendly neighborhood. They moved into that home in 1979. They were so happy. There was a big backyard, trees to climb, and lots of room to spread out in. They began to settle in and were fully moved in by January of 1980. Things were great and nothing out of the ordinary was happening. It would change on a cold winter night. Everyone had gone to bed and my father was in and out of sleep. At one point in the night, my father heard footsteps walking up and then down the staircase from the living room to the second floor where the bedrooms were. He thought it may have been my sister, who was 13 at the time, exploring or going for a snack in the kitchen, so he dismissed it. He later heard footsteps again, but this time the footsteps were walking the hall outside the bedrooms and stopping at each door. He then fell asleep. My mother awoke sometime after that to the sound of footsteps. This time, they stopped outside their bedroom. She looked at the doorway and saw the figure of a woman in blue. My mother was frozen in fear. She says that she broke out into a cold sweat and could not move. That's when the spirit spoke to her. It said, "Do you know where Margaret is?" She cannot answer, let alone move. She must have fallen back asleep and awoke in the morning. My mother, who is a devout Catholic, didn't know what to think. She believed in spirits, but was shaken by the events. She told her father, and he called her crazy, that he didn't believe in nonsense, so she dropped it. My father did tell my mother about his footsteps experience right before her sighting. Flash forward to the events of September 30th, 1981. I was born that night. My grandparents were watching the other kids at the house. My grandfather was sitting in the living room reading a newspaper when something caught his eye. Coming from the dining room into the living room was the figure of a woman. She glided past him and up the stairs to the second floor where the kids and my grandmother were sleeping. He bounded up the stairs after her, but there was no woman. When my mother and father returned home with me from the hospital, my grandfather took my mother aside and said, "I believe you now." That's all he had to say, and she knew what he was talking about. He never talked about it again unless it was specifically brought up. We continued to live in that house until I was 18 years old. We're not scared ever. We felt no evil presence, but odd things would always occur. Pictures would come off the walls and land 4 or 5 feet from the walls. Shades go up and down on their own. Footsteps in the attic when no one was there. Music in the attic when no one was up there. Glimpses of darting objects out of the corner of our eyes. Later on, a woman who lived in the house as a child before my parents brought it up, stopped by and wanted to look at the old house. We let her. She stopped at the staircase and said to my parents, "Have you seen her?" My mother finally got more validation. The woman in blue had made herself known to the previous owners, too. They had very similar experiences. My mother had a friend who was sensitive to the spiritual world. She was around 30 years old when she was diagnosed with cancer. She died not too long after that. Before her passing, she told my mom that she always felt a presence in the home. One day, when she was visiting with my mother, her cancer had progressed and things were not hopeful. My other said to her, "When you pass on, please come back and give me a sign." Now, my mother's friend loved curtains. She was particularly fond of the curtains my mom had on the door in the kitchen. Well, one day, not long after her friend's death, my mother was with her Bible study friends, and they asked her for the sign that she was okay. At that moment, one side of the curtain slowly lifted up as if someone were looking out the window and then slowly went back down. As I said before, we were never frightened in that house. We never felt threatened or sensed anything evil. We just shared our home with a spirit. We never did see her again, but she always made her presence known. As a matter of fact, we would always say something like, "We know you're here. We're okay with that, but please don't show yourself to us again, as it's a little scary." She must have listened.
There was a lot going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that if I've come home from just having a baby that I'd want my dad to say, "Oh, yeah, by the way, I believe you about the ghost now."
You never really know exactly where that's going to go.
No.
Hey, you know why I believe you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what happened? Yes, you know, it could go in any which direction.
Sure.
Anywhere from, hey, the fridge door opened by itself to, hey, the cat grew a second head, you mm-hmm. know, and then it disappeared. You know, all sorts of horrible things that could pop up there.
Yeah.
It's interesting that just the resolution of please don't show yourself to us again, as it's a little scary.
And that, you know, that's why we always say, try that first.
Yeah. And sometimes it's a last resort because a lot, what seems so simple, you don't really think of.
Mm-hmm.
You think this is going to, I need an exorcist, I need this or that. And then sometimes it's just, if it's something like this, sometimes it will just listen and be like, "Oh, okay, my bad."
Yeah.
I don't know why it's that simple sometimes. If you would have told me that that was going to be a common occurrence in this show and in the stories that we get when we first started it, I would have said, "Nah, BS. There's no way that that's going to work that well." It seems to work pretty well in a lot of cases.
Well, and I think a lot of cases you're dealing with a ghost that used to be a person. And
sure.
Because they used to be a person, they get it, you know?
Yeah. They have some sensitivities and understand.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fine. I get it.
Yeah.
So, good story. Thank you for sharing that with us. The phone number is 855-853-4802 to Real Ghost Stories Online. Next story comes in from Lila. It says, "I was named after my maternal grandmother. We lived across different time zones, so as a child, I'd often write letters to her, and we would stay with her whenever we would go visit her. I always had a feeling that she was nicer to me than most of her grandkids because she never got angry or scolded me, unlike my other cousins. I imagine maybe it was because I was the only one of her grandkids named after her, and maybe she liked me a bit more because of it. Sounds silly, but that was my reasoning as a kid, anyway. When I was about 17, she suffered a series of strokes, and within a year, she passed away. I was unable to attend her funeral or burial because it was my senior year of high school, and I could not afford to miss any days. My mother flew out to her hometown for about a week or two to bury my grandmother and be around family. When my mom flew back from her trip, my dad and I picked her up from the airport and decided to stay the night at an uncle's who lived nearby. That night, my mom, dad, and I shared a room. My mom and dad slept in one bed while I took the bunk bed. Mind you, the bunk was neither on top or the bottom, but placed in the very middle of the bunk standalone. It's weird to explain, but basically had to jump up a bit to get onto the bed. I remember feeling nervous about sleeping that night. I'm prone to having an overactive imagination at night, and it can intensify. But the night was quiet, and I fell asleep shortly after everyone else did. The next morning, around 7 perhaps, I was on my side asleep, in bed when I felt what I thought was my mom sit on the bed beside me. Felt as though she was watching me sleep, the way she would when I was a small child. In my haze state of mind, I found this rather strange and corny of her to do, and I was curious as to why she was doing this. I turned around and opened my eyes and saw my mom was standing by her bed, rummaging through her luggage. I thought to myself, I must have turned around later than I thought. Perhaps in my sleepiness, I distorted time, and by the time I turned around, she had already moved away from my bed. Turned over to go back to sleep, and I felt someone sit down slowly on the bed again, this time towards where my feet were. I ignored it and continued to try and sleep. What was strange, though, one of my feet began to move slightly and slide onto the dent on the bed where the weight was. Quickly sat up and looked around, but saw no one in the room with me. I think I might have even said out loud, "What the hell?" to myself. I brushed it off, turned back over, and went back to sleep. Later that day, I casually asked my aunt if anything strange ever happens in their home. She said no. When we were driving home, I asked my mom if she sat on the bed with me that morning, and she replied, "Why would I sit on the bed with you? Besides, it's a bunk bed. How would I be able to sit on it if it's higher than our bed?" My dad then said, "That's weird. Felt our bed shake this morning, too. That was your mom leaving the bed." Second time I felt it and saw it, it wasn't her. I just got out of bed and went to make breakfast. I honestly think that might have been my grandmother saying goodbye to us. I feel rather fortunate that she sat on my bed and made her presence known. I didn't feel scared. Like I said, it felt very motherly and tender in a way. I feel bad now that I didn't realize it was her at the time and really took to the moment as it was happening instead of shrugging it off and going back to sleep. I hope you guys enjoyed my story. I have many more that I might share another day. Take care.
I think that's neat that she came and visited both of them in the same way, you know, just kind of almost like a mother checking in on a child while they sleep.
It's one of those things, and I guess it kind of depends on your mindset and how often you talk about ghost stories, but part of me is like, why would you not think it was her? Where you were at, everything that was going on, that would be like my first thought.
Sure.
You know, but then again, we tell ghost stories every day of the week. It's not necessarily the first thing on everyone's mind.
Yeah.
So I get that. And there's a lot of things going through your mind at that moment in time. But I can see like the looking back and the going, oh, why didn't I think, you know, because it's just like perfect timing and an experience one way or another that happens to a lot of people like that, whether it be someone sitting in a bed, just seeing them, hearing them, smelling them, something of that nature right after the death.
And it happens so much more frequently, it seems, when you wanted to be able to attend the funeral, but you weren't able to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they come to visit you. That's like almost not guaranteed, but pretty close.
It seems to be the common occurrence.
Yes.
Although you don't want to be the one where it's like, all right, I'm not going to go to their funeral because I'd rather have them come to me.
And then you miss it.
And then you miss it. And you're like, oh, they never came to me. I really wish I would have gone to the funeral. So
right.
It's hard to guarantee that one.
Yeah.
But it is common. I mean, that does seem to be the trend. Lacey writes in, "Hey, Tony and Jenny, Lacey here again. I was just listening to an episode from a couple weeks back where a listener called in from Japan. It reminded me I have a story from Japan to tell as well on behalf of my brother, Eli. So I've written a couple stories from my childhood and somehow got on the subject with my brother while on the phone with him last week. He's a nuclear pipe fitter and has been TDY in Yokosawa since January. We somehow started discussing ghosts and haunted places, and I was telling him about how I wrote the story about my bed shaking inexplicably one night when we were kids and shared a room. Wanted to see if he remembered that happening the way I did. And being that he finished my sentence, I can confirm that the incident took place the way I remembered it." Anyway, this prompted him to tell me about something he had been happening to him while in Japan. He had forgotten to tell me until that point. When he first arrived in Japan, he was set up at an old hotel, Yokosuka. The main hotel is the new hotel, Yokosuka, but it was placed in the annex referred to as the old one. Anyway, he said the place already felt creepy to him from the start, and then after a while, maybe a week or so of being there, he noticed he would return to his room after work and his suitcase would be in a different spot from where he left it. Rosie thought maybe the floor was uneven, causing it to roll, but there was no noticeable inclines or dips in the floor that he could see. Plus, he kept a lot of stuff in the suitcase, and it was very heavy. His next thought was maybe one of the cleaning staff had been coming in and moving stuff around, but he didn't notice anything else out of place, and considering the random spots where the suitcase would end up, he didn't think it was likely. He even started leaving the Do Not Disturb sign outside his room to be sure no one was coming in, and still the suitcase would be found moved. This went on for about a month, and then one night, while Skyping his girlfriend, he witnessed the suitcase move. It was up against the wall, full of stuff, and slowly rolled out into the room. His girlfriend on Skype wasn't able to see this happen, but she did witness his freaked-out reaction. He got the feeling whatever was there wanted him to take his suitcase and leave. Needless to say, when he was given the option of moving to a different hotel after his stay was extended, he jumped at the chance. It's not a very wild story, but was a creepy experience for him nonetheless, much like the other listeners from Japan who keeps seeing their cat's balls toy move. I tried to do a bit of Googling to see if I could find any history of the hotel. Most interesting info I could find is that nearby in the Gridley Tunnel in Yokosuka Naval Base is supposedly one of the most haunted places in Japan, where the apparition of a samurai, I always say that incorrectly.
Samari. That's funny.
That's like my fourth grade version of me coming out, because there was a video game called Samurai Showdown, but I didn't know how to pronounce it in fourth grade, so I just called it Samari.
Because it rhymed with Atari?
I guess so.
Okay.
So now it's still, when I see it, I still see it that way, but Samurai. So there you go. That's me.
That's great.
Has been reported many times, though I doubt the samurai was chilling in my brother's hotel room moving a suitcase around. It at least lends credence to the notion that the area is very old and known for paranormal activity. I tried to convince my brother to visit the forest. I can't say the name of the haunted forest. Can you say the name of the haunted forest? I'm not even going to try. Otherwise known as the Suicide Forest, but I'm not sure he has the time or desire to do so before returning home. Anyways, thanks for letting me share. I'll be excited to hear his story if you use it. I know Japan has quite a few well-known creepy places, so I hope we'll hear more about them from listeners in the future.
I think I'd be afraid of something coming home with me if I went to that forest.
Yeah.
And I think that's so funny that the girlfriend was Skyping with him when something moved a suitcase. You know, I'm sure that that was just classic.
It makes you wonder if there was some sort of reason for it moving at that point in time. Like, was it trying to give it a sign of go home? This is your girlfriend?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it trying to get a sign of, like, I don't like you talking to your girlfriend?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could take it almost either way.
Sure.
You know, if just because of the timing of that and no other reason or no other time that it happened when he was just there alone. Very odd. But
I almost wonder if maybe it wasn't like, I'm going to move this while you have somebody who's going to witness your reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not just your word saying you saw something. It's somebody saw you see something.
I see. Yeah. A little more validation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's actually a ghost trying to help the person not sound crazy when they're telling their story. Good for that ghost.
Yeah.
That's a nice ghost. Miranda writes in, hello, my name is Miranda. I'm from a small town in Michigan. My childhood house is over 100 years old and it's next door to a Catholic cemetery, church, and school. Every now and then there'd be unexplained noises, but so long as they left us alone, we left them alone. Grew up watching murder mysteries and ghost hunting shows, so we didn't explore unexplained noises or try to engage any of the noises. So when I was very young, under the age of 8, I had rolled over in my sleep, and when I opened my eyes, I saw a shadow figure. He had the appearance of a short man with a dog's head and floppy dog ears. I rolled over and fell asleep. I didn't feel any fear from the shadow figure or anything bad, but I knew it wasn't normal. I also knew that I didn't want to engage with the creature, so I pretended I just didn't see it. I often used to have a prayer I would recite in my head until I fell asleep. It was, anything bad, please go away, and anything good, please protect me, or something similar to that. Soon after seeing the figure, dream, I don't remember the dream I was having before I woke up, but when I woke up, I saw my father pulling up the driveway through a small window in my room. I was excited that Daddy was home, so I went to go out of my room to greet him. There, as I saw the rest of my room, half of my room resembled the inside of a barn. To be more precise, it resembled the barn next to my house. Long ago, my home was a farmhouse with a barn and fields, but by the time my parents bought the house, it didn't include the fields or the barn. Often, my older sister and I would sneak into this barn and play, so I recognized the interior. However, unlike the barn, which also had its very own creepy vibe, or a normal room, there was no door. I couldn't get out of my room, and I realized it was a dream. Though not before panicking and being very confused again, I was under the age of 8. As the years passed and I grew up, I was moved to the larger room and I didn't experience any shadow figures or double dreams. I did, however, get a vision. Not the type who gets visions, I've only had one other. In this vision, I saw a woman lying face down and blood pooled under her as I passed this room while walking down the stairs. I don't know if it was real or if there have been any deaths in my house. I believe the previous owner died of old age or something similar, but that was downstairs because she was too old to use the upstairs. The indoor porch was recently added before my parents moved in, but not as old as the original house. Once while walking around the house around dusk, I saw the faint shadow of a man who was wearing a trench coat and his head was covered in a hat, and he was looking down. At this time, I had a friend who was very knowledgeable in the paranormal, and I told her about the man. I didn't feel any fear when I saw him, only curiosity, and she told me that he was a guardian spirit. The fact that he was looking down meant everything was more or less okay in the house. One last paranormal experience I had was when I was in my parents' room studying. It was only my mother and myself at the house, so I nearly jumped out of my skin when I heard a knock and a male voice whisper my name. Needless to say, I booked it out of that room. Sorry for the long message, but a lot of stories are too short to send in just on their own. Oh, and the other vision I had is a very pleasant one, but hasn't happened yet. I had a vision of myself older than I am now, with long hair past my chest ever since early childhood. And even now, I've had short hair. I had that glow pregnant woman seemed to have, and I was extremely pregnant and happy. So I'm hoping that vision is true, while I hope I was over-imaginative with the other vision. I often fall asleep to your podcast while still living in my childhood home. Thankfully, no paranormal activity has been kicked up because of it, though I would still adapt the policy of, you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone, if any activity ever did pick up. I plan to be an EPP as soon as I can afford it. Have a wonderful day, and keep up the good work.
I don't know that I've heard of the, if the ghost is looking down, that it's a guardian spirit and everything's okay.
I wouldn't put too much weight on that.
Yeah. It sounds like a shadow person to me, which, mm-hmm. You know, some shadow people we think are actually not bad, but it doesn't sound like it's a guardian spirit to me.
I really wouldn't put a whole lot of weight on any assumption of any ghost,
mm-hmm.
where it's like an overall across the board. Well, if it does this or if it has that, that means it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Just as I'd do the same for bad too. I wouldn't say unless it did something really bad, you know, then you obviously know it's not very good. But just like a appearance-wise,
sure.
type thing. If it looks like this or says this or that, I wouldn't always necessarily say across the board, well, that's demonic. I mean, you can just, there's a lot of horrible people who say shit that you could borderline say are evil people, but they're not, you know, of the devil.
Yeah.
They're just assholes. So it's, it plays both ways. But yeah, that's one of those things to be very cautious of. It's just because of one thing this way or one thing that way, that doesn't always mean it's good or bad or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good to hear, like, not a whole lot, you know, bad happened here.
Right.
So, just be aware. Just future note for future haunting experiences. We just ruined that now.
Sorry.
Rachel writes in, this story has a backstory that must be told in order to appreciate what happened recently. Back in the 1940s, my maternal grandfather abandoned my grandmother, my mother, and her siblings after he got back from the Second World War. My grandmother moved back in with her mother, who was by now a widow, with my mother, her little brother Daniel, and her older sister Elizabeth. My aunt Elizabeth was 10 when her father left the family. She adored her father and was extremely upset that her father was gone. Elizabeth began to act out. One day, she locked her grandmother, who they called Mama, out of the house and would not let her back in. Mama was sick, and my mother says she remembers Mama passing out a lot, and my mother, at the age of 4 or 5, would bring Mama wet washcloths to put on her face as she lay on the floor until she was strong enough to get up. Mama watched my mother, aunt, and uncle while my grandmother worked. They were very poor, and my mother and uncle commented recently that they were so thankful that my grandmother had worked so hard so they didn't get put in an orphanage. My grandfather did not pay any child support or alimony, and my mom talks about wearing shoes to school with holes in them and wearing underwear with holes. My grandmother felt that she could not handle my aunt's behavior, especially since her mother was so sick, and so she sent my aunt Elizabeth to live with her father's sister, their aunt Helen. As you can imagine, my aunt felt abandoned and rejected by her parents. She never got over the pain of her childhood. My grandmother inherited the house from her mother, Mama, when she died, and my uncle Daniel inherited it from my grandmother when she died. They had been very poor, and the house was in terrible shape because my grandmother didn't have the money to maintain it properly. My uncle spent about 2 years and totally renovated the little house. It was beautiful when he was finished. He sold the house to my Aunt Elizabeth in 1980. Uncle Daniel said Elizabeth said to him, "After he sold her the house, no one will ever throw me out of this house again." Last year, my Aunt Elizabeth died at the age of 83. The neighbors noticed the mail was piling up and no one had seen her in about a week, so they called the police to do a welfare check. They knocked on the door, and she didn't answer, so they broke the door down and found her body on a couch in the back bedroom. She had been dead so long that she was unrecognizable. The medical examiner could only identify her by comparing x-rays. The house had been in our family since about 1910, and it was sad to put it on the market. I told my mother that Elizabeth was not going to leave that house, even in death. She laughed, but I wasn't joking. Anyway, the house is in a trendy, popular part of town and sold quickly. That was 4 months ago. My mother got a call from my Uncle Daniel the other day. The neighbors that live next door to our former family home told my uncle that the neighbors ran out of the house in the middle of the night and have put the house up for sale. The new owners were starting to renovate, and all they would say was that they decided they wanted a newer home. They left all the belongings in the house and never came back for them. The neighbors went and peeked in the window and said that the place looked like it had been ransacked. Furniture was turned over. Things were scattered all over the floor. I think my aunt didn't like people in her house and made sure they left. She was not a mean person, but she meant what she said. No one was going to throw her out of that house again, dead or alive.
And, you know, when you go to renovate, it just sometimes stirs things up, and it sounds like she was not going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
She stayed.
I wonder if that had to be disclosed, that the person that used to live there died and was decayed to the point where they had to do x-rays before she was found in the home.
I think that's something where you take that exact phrase and terminology and carve it into granite and put it on the entryway.
Okay.
It's a little plaque.
Yeah.
Welcome to our new home. We hope you enjoy your time here. By the way, the person who used to live here died, and we eventually found her because her mail started piling up and she decayed in the bedroom you're probably going to stay in. We had to identify her with x-rays.
Mm-hmm. That's gross.
Period.
Yeah.
That's the plaque.
Right.
Really long, kind of detailed, and that's what you get. I don't know.
No. That's quite a bit different than just, oh, just the little lady that used to live here passed away.
I think that right there is all you have to disclose.
Yeah.
Not the details.
That's just so much different in my mind.
It is. Although you've crossed off the list of any death in any home.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah.
So That's that. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really matter the scale of it to you.
No.
Right?
It doesn't matter the scale of it. I don't want any death in my home. And that's going to keep me from having really old homes, I know. But
what if someone dies in the home you live in? Like, what if you had a guest over, for example, heart attack, dies in the house?
I don't know. I've never thought about that.
Can't control that.
No, can't control that.
Is it different when they're like the actual habitants of the home versus just a visitor?
I don't know, because I don't know how much or how likely a visitor would be to haunt a home that's not theirs.
Sure. I would say probably not. I mean, unless it's some sort of tragic thing where it's like, I don't know, insert horrible accident here.
Sure.
You know, something happens, you know, freak.
And I think it's a little different, too, because you know that person. You're assuming.
Sure.
I mean, unless it's just like a contractor who electrocutes himself working in your basement.
Yeah, something like that.
Right. But if it's like a guest for a dinner party, you kind of know who the person is. And that to me is a little different.
Sure.
I wouldn't wish any of the above to anybody.
No, of course. I'm just wondering, because then you already have the home mm-hmm. and freak accident happens and they're dead.
Yeah.
In your home.
Yeah.
What about just property line? Does it have to be in the physical residence, or is it different? And this is speaking in the terms of buying a home.
I don't want any death on my property, inside or outside.
Okay, I'll do you one better.
Okay, good grief.
Playing death on the property. Okay, so let's say it's a property that has like 2 acres on it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say there's a death on the acreage mm-hmm. of the property when it's all one property. Let's say eventually then they... Whoever is owning the home where when this death occurs, they sell off the acre where the death occurred. It's, let's say it's just, you know, it's out in the field in some accident with an animal or a tractor or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then that's a totally different lot now. But then the house goes up for sale. That piece of property where the death occurred, no longer part of the acreage, no part of the property line, but was at the time of the death 10 years ago. Or whatever year, it doesn't really matter.
Well, how far do you take that? I mean, essentially, at one point, there were no property lines
sure.
anywhere, so all deaths would essentially be...
on somebody's property.
Right.
I'm saying, like, in the recent history.
I just don't know. It just depends on the connection there. If that person had a strong connection to that house...
Like, if they lived in the house?
If there was a high likelihood that they would haunt that home,
okay.
I'd really consider that before... I said, hell no. So,
for example, where we live, there's a vacant lot next door.
Yeah, if somebody died over there, I don't know.
In the woods.
I don't know.
I bet Blair Witch happened right there.
Right.
That was probably the original setting.
On that tiny lot next door with, you know.
They did a lot of just, you know, they just did different angles to make it feel like they were in a forest. It's like a set.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that's coming back.
Yeah, I haven't figured out if it's new.
It
or,
is.
Okay.
It is. I was surprised we were watching something the other night, I think Fear the Walking Dead or something, and also in the preview came up, I'm like, Blair, what? Is it 1999 all over again?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is. And I said, are we that old? Because I guess I could be wrong on this, but from what I gathered on the plot is that this is a plot where these are people now investigating the original Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
The movie. Not this movie, but what in theory was the people in that movie. And so here we go again. Prepare to throw up in the theater because their camera is so damn shaky.
I can't. Motion sickness. That's why I have to drive. I can't. I get sick.
I hope this one they take into account that, because the original one was really just shot almost like as a student film almost.
Mm-hmm.
It was like literally not with any anticipation of ever being a big film. It was people making a movie, like making a movie.
Okay, but let me throw this at you. When that came out, reality TV was a pretty new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has seen so much reality TV and shaky camera stuff that I think we've probably adjusted better to where you probably aren't going to notice it as much this time.
Yeah, I mean, reality TV has more movie and mobile cameras, but they're not so shaky like Blair. Blair Witch was like uncle with a shaky hand that has tremors using the camcorder.
Oh, God.
You know, that's how,
jeez,
that's how that
Tony.
Was shot. It was. It was horribly shaky.
Okay.
You know, it was like, it was 1990. This is a heavy-ass camcorder I'm holding around on my mm-hmm. shoulder taking the shots. So now I think we probably have adjusted a bit.
Yeah.
But I think anyone still that goes back and tries to watch Blair Witch is like, oh, my God, why is the camera so damn shaky?
Okay.
And I think even the kids today would be even more of a foreign concept, because now you pick up your phone, which weighs half a pound,
mm-hmm.
and you can shoot crystal clear 4K video on it. So the idea of, well, what do you mean your arm got tired?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because video cameras weighed 8 pounds. And you had to put them on your shoulder, you know, depending on what you were using at the time. But I don't know. I don't know if I even want to see it or not. The first one, I was kind of like, eh, I felt more sick from the motion than I did by the scariness of it.
I didn't see the first one. So.
Well, hey, that could be family movie night tonight.
Right, we'll do that.
Be great. Everyone will love it.
And you get up with nightmare duty.
Again, I think more people will be sick from the shaking.
Okay.
Although, Yeah, that nightmare duty would probably, with the little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's have to do The Conjuring, too. That'll be... Am I still not allowed to watch it in the house?
No, you're not.
On the property?
No. You go in the little woods next door and watch it,
like,
over there.
If I go over the property line.
Right. You go over to Blair Witch and watch it over there.
Probably make a little stool out of some logs.
That won't be weird at all.
What's your husband doing? He's watching a horror movie. I won't let him watch in the house because I fear it may infest our home with demons.
Mm-hmm.
That may... What's going to be the weirder conversation?
I don't know.
That wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, help keep us on the air, become an EPP. Sign up on the website, ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.